Black Talk Media Project would like to invite you to become a member of the BTR Community subscription-based social media platform. BTR Community is a platform that was set up for the listening audience of Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent Black radio network online. For just $24 per year, your subscription gives you access to an interactive space to share information with like-minded people with your privacy guaranteed. Your subscription will go a long way to help us maintain and improve our current media platforms. It will also help provide a budget so that we can begin the task of establishing localized media centers and radio stations across the United States. The best way to show your support and appreciation for what we do here at Black Talk Radio is to subscribe. Help us to help you be informed. Join BTRCommunity.com today.
The views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium. Good evening. You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. It is a Tuesday evening. Greetings to you all. Hope that the sound of my voice finds you in relative safety behind these enemy lines. Today's date is March 13th, 2018. I do want to send out a belated birthday wish to my little brother who is in the state of Ohio. Haven't been in touch with him lately and just simply had forgotten that his birthday just came about. Tonight, we'll be discussing some of the news that caught my eye over the past few days, but of course, the phone lines are open. To anyone who wants to comment on this news or share some other news and get my opinion or whatnot on that particular news. In order to do so, all you got to do is give us a call at 704-802-5056. That's 704-802-5056. Hit the star key twice to put yourself in the caller's queue. I'll notice you on the board and I will come to you for your comment or your question. Some quick network notes about Black Talk Radio Network, specifically for our media partners and our donors. The February stat report is out. The February stat report is out. I shouldn't say it's out, but I should say it's completed. So I just need to put together the newsletter that highlights the different sections of that report. Shout out to Agent M, our volunteer in the UK, who puts together or compiles the reports from several different reports as we try to include as much information as possible about the media operations of Black Talk Media Project, which is a U.S.-based media nonprofit here in North Carolina. So that look out for that tomorrow. Tomorrow I will get that newsletter posted and sent out to our media partners and donors. All right. Some other news that caught my eye that I did not put in tonight's lineup to discuss, and I got plenty of stories to discuss, and I may not get to them all, but, you know, I was just listening to a couple of tracks from Tupac Shakur, and I'm just reminded by this story as I was listening to, you know, Tupac. I'm reminded by a story that one of our donors and family members of BTRCommunity.com, L.A. Ramon, had posted about this little white rapper. I don't know how old he is. He looks fairly young, like in his 20s. or whatnot. His stage name is Little Zan, I guess, X-A-N. I imagine that's short for the drugs, Xanax or whatnot. And, you know, he got called out, particularly by Waka Flocka Flame, who I don't admire as an artist, as a hip-hop artist or a rap artist or whatever. I don't listen to his music. But he did call out this little white boy for saying that Tupac was boring and he doesn't see what the hype is about Tupac and all that. And so, you know, people been going at that little white boy. I know, you know, this is a topic I'm a hip hop head, but I normally don't discuss hip hop, you know, on this program. But, you know, I have noticed the infiltration of hip hop ever since Eminem was introduced to the world by Dr. Dre and, you know, that whole crew and what have you, that now it just seems like, you know, they just let anybody, you know, become a rapper. Not saying that, you know, there's some kind of license you need to get or what have you to be a rapper or whatnot. But I'm just noticing the mainstream media is focusing or featuring a whole lot of these little white rap artists. And primarily what they're pushing is drug use and what have you. I mean, Lil Xanax, you know. And so, you know, we got hip hop just ain't what it used to be. It has gotten worse and worse over the decades. And I think it's time for black folks to take hip hop back. We need to take it back. That's an original art form that was created for us, by us. And, you know, lots of negativity have been injected into the hip hop community. So that caught my eye. Also, this new missile that Russia has developed, you know, we've been talking about it in BTR community in one of the threads. The Russians have developed a missile that can be armed with a nuclear warhead or conventional warhead, you know, just regular munitions and what have you. But they have developed a missile that goes 10 times the speed of sound. And they're saying that this missile is so fast that the conventional radar equipment, radar systems that you have to protect or give you early warning, that these missiles are just simply too fast. And we were just discussing, you know, debating whether or not that gives the Russians an advantage, you know, when you have mutually assured destruction with a nuclear war. You know, we just been talking about those issues, and that's just something I hope never comes to pass. Although I acknowledge I have no control over that. You know, I don't have any control over any nuclear arsenals and what have you. So if one was to break out, it's not my fault or anything, but I just hope that never happens, because everyone on this planet, in my opinion, is going to suffer from that. All right, so that's one of the stories that caught my eye in the last 24 hours. Again, you know, you got this little white rapper talking about Tupac was boring, and then you have the Russians who have developed this supersonic missile. Okay. All right, let me just go over some of the stories that I have highlighted for you tonight. And again, I'll try to get to them all. Some of them I don't have a whole lot to say about. But others, you know, I want to get more in depth. Would love to hear from you all out there if you have any comments on this. Listen, Hillary Clinton just needs to go away, man. I read that she fell down some stairs on a book tour and broke her toe. I know y'all might think this is mean of me to say, but I wish she would have broke her neck. All right, because this woman is by herself is a cancer on humanity. And it just seems like she exists to just stir up crap all the time. So now she is out there making this ridiculous assumption or making this statement that white women voted for Donald Trump because their husbands or their boyfriends or their sons or what have you, white men, bully them into voting for Trump. Which, again, now, she ain't conducted no poll. There has been no poll done that shows that. So, again, she's out there on the book tour trying to make money and just making these asinine statements that don't make any sense whatsoever. So that's one of the stories I want to look at. Another story that we have been discussing in BTR community that I wanted to bring to the airwaves is a very important story. I'm actually working on getting a couple of guests to come on one Tuesday night and talk about this, but there's a story that came out from the Chicago Tribune that says researchers are unclear why suicide is increasing among black children. Now, the story also says that suicide is increasing among all children, but black children have the highest percentage in increasing suicides. And so what is this all about? Why are children and black children killing themselves more than others, according to some of these reports? And I think that is a story that we definitely need to take a look at and talk about. So that's one of the another story that I want to share with you tonight. This is also a very important story, one that is still developing. You may or may not have heard that several people, I think it's at least three people, it may have been actually only two people killed and one injured, but you have black people who seemingly are being targeted with these bombs, these package bombs or whatnot, you know, where people are leaving packages, boxes, what have you, on the doorsteps of these homes, and people are opening these boxes and they're exploding. Now, the police at first were trying to say, and this is occurring in Austin, Texas, I heard one of the officers or sheriff's department, I forget what his title is, but he was ready to call it a hate crime, saying that they don't think that this is a coincidence that black people are being targeted or the victims of these bombs have all been black people or black families and what have you. Now, he's backing away from hate crime as a designation of a motive. But I'm going to just say I've never been down with the terminology or the term hate crime, because what you're calling hate crimes in reality is terrorism. Why not just call it terrorism? Okay, why not call it terrorism and prosecute the terrorists like you do every other non-white group that you label terrorists? Well, I kind of answer that. All right, they don't want to label white people in this country as terrorists, and that's exactly what it is. This was a terrorist attack on American citizens. Why isn't it being called that? Why isn't it being, has Donald Trump taken to Twitter? You know, he loves to talk on Twitter and what have you. Has he sent out any condolences to the families, the American families of this horrific terrorist attack and what have you? So I definitely want to update you on that particular story. All right, let me move on. Another story that came across my news feed. How Native American slaveholders complicate the Trail of Tears narrative. This isn't the first time that I have talked about this, but this is a recent article. You have a new exhibit that is being shown at, I forget the name of it, and I'll give you the name when I get to it. The article comes from Smithsonian.com, but you have an American Indian Museum, you know, just like you got an African American Museum, you got a American Indian Museum, and a new exhibit that they have in this museum is pointing out how the Cherokee specifically practiced slavery against black people. So that's a story that I want to talk about. Again, it isn't the first time I have talked about being a descendant of a Cherokee woman. You know, and also with the Cherokee being based here in North Carolina in the Southeast, you had tribes in North Carolina, South Carolina, and Georgia. Many of those that were removed from North Carolina were also on the Trail of Tears and what have you. And, you know, when I really started studying slavery, you know, as I am a modern day abolitionist, because slavery was never abolished, I just started coming across all of this history, you know, especially pertaining to Cherokees, especially since I have a line of Cherokees in my family. And it's not anything, you know, that I feel like I should feel bad about, but I also have taken to say I don't have any sympathy for those people that was put on the Trail of Tears. The only ones I have sympathy for is the victims of slavery that was forced out on that Trail of Tears with them. And I also don't feel bad about them having their land stolen or taken from them, considering how they sided with the Confederacy. I just really don't, in terms of individuals, you know, which we all are individuals before we are part of a group, I don't mistreat anyone. And as far as developing relationships with people, I do that on a case by case basis. But when it comes to them as a group, when it comes to Cherokees as a group, I really don't have any sympathy for them whatsoever. And I want to share this article with you, so in case you didn't know this particular history. But, you know, I also think it's great that the curators at this Indian American Indian Museum are not trying to hide that history and putting it on display in the museum. All right, so that's the story. Now, also, speaking of slavery, I published a video and I wrote a little short expose about Saudi Arabia and slavery. So I came across this story where a Saudi royal family, which also has diplomatic status here in the United States, being a member of the Saudi royals, for those that don't know, most of their government positions, like the heads of different agencies or whatnot, are primarily, if not entirely, staffed by members of the royal family. So you got members of the Saudi royal family who are being sued by a black woman who is a native of Eritrea for slavery. They enslaved this woman, took her passport, wouldn't give her a passport, kept her on lockdown. The only time she was allowed to leave the house was under guard and what have you. And she was freed in a raid on this family compound of these Saudi royals. And this did not happen in Saudi Arabia. This happened right here in the United States in Alexandria, Virginia. And I just did not see a whole lot of headline news stories about this. I had not even knew that it happened until I came across this story about this woman filing a lawsuit. Now, I had long known about the addiction to slavery the Saudi Arabian culture has. You know, I've actually visited Saudi Arabia and during the Gulf War. So I shouldn't say I visited, right? I was deployed there during a war. So I spent a little time in Riyadh, and got to observe some of the stuff that was going on. I knew that, you know, they don't treat women properly. They don't treat women as the human beings that they are, which means they're entitled to all human rights that a human would claim for themselves. And they basically live in a segregated society. I saw that when I was in Saudi Arabia. I remember going to Wendy's, which is a American-based corporation that uses contractors, that uses prison slave labor. But I went to a Wendy's in Riyadh, which is one of the largest cities in Saudi Arabia. We were stationed just outside of Saudi Arabia, but we would take, on our downtime, we would take trips to the city to go shopping and see the sights and things of that nature. And so females could not go by themselves. Female U.S. soldiers could not go by themselves. They had to have a male escort, just like the Saudi Arabian women had to have male escorts in when they go out in public. So this black female asked me if I would go with her to Riyadh. So I went with her. So she could go, you know, to the perfume shops and stuff like that. And so we, you know, wanted to get something to eat, walked into Wendy's, and I noticed that, you know, they had like a lower level. When you first walk in, you're like at the ground floor level, but then you walk up some stairs to another level, and that's where you place your order. But then they got seating up there. So we ordered our food, and then we walked back down, because I always like to be close to the door in case I have to get the hell out real quick, or if somebody comes through the door, they may not see me where I'm sitting, and I might be able to get behind them or something. So, you know, that's where we were seated, and I noticed that these Saudi Arabian females kept looking at me and laughing and what have you. And she was, and the black female noticed it too. And she thought that maybe they was flirting with me. And then I'm like, okay, I know better than to say anything to these women. So, but I started looking around at the other, you know, level. And I noticed I was getting a death look from some of them Saudi Arabian males and what have you. And that's when it dawned on me, damn, they got segregated seating. This is segregation. And so the reason they're looking at me and laughing at me is because I'm seated in the women's section. And I stay seated in that women's section. But, you know, I looked at them Saudi Arabian women as victims, and they are victims in that regard. But guess what? These same women are practicing slavery against non-white people that they import into their country for labor. That's something else I picked up on while I was in country, was that all of the manual labor type labor was done by non-Saudi Arabians. You know, I would see Filipinos, Pakistanis. I didn't see too many black people while I was there, but I do know that black people have been victimized, because since I've been there over the years, I've seen these videos surface on YouTube. It's showing them abusing, you know, African women and what have you. So I definitely want to look at that story. There have been some moves by some other nations to protect their citizens when they go to Saudi Arabia as imported domestic labor and what have you. I wouldn't be sending, I would ban, if I was the president of a nation, especially an African nation, I would ban all citizens from going to Saudi Arabia. I just really would, man, you know. But there have been a couple of African countries and other nations who have taken steps to ensure that their people are safe in Saudi Arabia. And in that essay, I just give a little breakdown of the history of Saudi Arabia's role, not just Saudi Arabia, but Arabs, period, Arabians, period, in practicing slavery against black people. Cause I don't think we focus on that enough as we study slavery. And they're still practicing slavery. They have not given up that that institution, just like the United States hasn't given up that institution. And we know that Saudi Arabia and the United States are very close allies and always, you know, looking out for each other. Another story. I saw this come across my YouTube subscriptions, and there was a radio interview that David Sheen. Now, David Sheen is a Jewish Israeli. I think he's from Canada, but he lives in Israel now, and he's a journalist, and he produces a lot of videos and reports about the racism that black people face in Israel. So I came across this story, and I was like, you know what, let me write something up about this as well and share this and talk about this you know, on Tuesday night, because you got these Jews here, and when I say these Jews, I'm not talking about all of them. I'm talking about the right-wing Jews of the Republican Party who have been attacking black politicians and trying to force them to denounce Minister Louis Farrakhan because of something ignorant. And yes, I said what he said was ignorant about Jews running the FBI and being responsible for COINTELPRO. But I'm like, but at the same time, ain't nobody got to denounce him. If people don't agree with his statement, they don't agree with his statement. Let's leave it at that. What makes you think you can force anyone to denounce anyone? And what the hell does that really mean when you denounce somebody? So what? Somebody could say, hey, I denounce Black Talk Radio and Scotty Reed. You think I give a darn if you denounce me? I don't care. That ain't going to do nothing to me or for me. So I'm like, you know, what's the big deal about trying to denounce somebody? Why are they trying to get these politicians to denounce Farrakhan and what have you? All right. And so, you know, they've said that they don't agree with his comments. It should be left at that, right? But these right-wing Jews, some of them are in the Republican Party, are trying to bash these black politicians who happen to be Democrats because of something Louis Farrakhan said. And so I'm like, okay, but are you denouncing those Jews over there in Israel that's practicing racism against the Ethiopian population who are also Jews? Okay. And so again, you know, when you start talking about Jews, it can become very confusing. Because as far as I'm concerned, my definition of a Jew is anybody who practices Judaism. Their skin color don't matter to me. Their nationality doesn't matter to me. All right. None of that matters. And so today I was also looking up, well, what is a Jew? And so there is even no consensus, even among Jews, about who's a Jew and how one becomes a Jew. Is it because my mother was born a Jew, or is it because my father was born a Jew? Does it have to do with my religious conversion, or are Jews a ethnic group? It's all over the place, man. All right. And so, but I don't see any of these people calling on people to denounce Louis Farrakhan for his incorrect comments about the Jews in the FBI and COINTELPRO. I don't see any of them denouncing Benjamin Netanyahu for practicing racism, for making racist comments. Did you hear about any Jews who were condemning Netanyahu when CEO Obama was in office and they said those things about Obama? No, you did not. And you don't hear them saying nothing about Jewish supremacy, a.k.a. white supremacy, that's being practiced in Israel right now. They don't have nothing to say. They have nothing to say. They ain't, and nobody's even calling on them. Well, I'm calling them out. You want to talk about denouncing some Farrakhan? Then why don't you denounce this racism and white supremacy that's being practiced by Jews in Israel? And there have been a couple of polls that came out that say a majority, there's a clear majority of Jews in Israel who admit to practicing racism against Africans inside of Israel, whether those be those African refugees or whether they be those Ethiopian Israeli citizens who also are Jews. So I definitely want to share a little bit about that with you. And finally, one of the last stories that I plan to get to, hopefully I'll be able to get to, is a terrible story out of Senegal. I do want to start sharing more stories from the continent of Africa, but there's a very sad story coming to you out of Africa, Senegal, to be specific. And you've had a lot of children rights activists who have been holding demonstrations in the capital city of Dakar over the increasing number of child abductions and killings. All of these little black children are being kidnapped, and sold into slavery, or they're being killed in the process. And so that's a problem. I got a problem with that. And I need to let people know that that's occurring on the continent. I tell you, black life ain't safe nowhere on the planet. It's just not. It is just not. So who's behind these killings? Do you think, you know, as I was thinking about it, I was like, these are other black people. These are other Africans that's kidnapping these children and killing these children. Because I think it would be hard for a European, which I do believe there's evidence to suggest that they are the primary buyers, okay? They are the ones that's driving so much wrong that is going on in Africa, but it's hard for me to believe that some white man can kidnap a child on the streets of Senegal and not be seen doing it. I just don't think that's possible. So, you know, we got a lot of stuff to clean up in our own houses is the way I feel about it. And, you know, it's just no excuse whatsoever for these crimes against these children. So those are some of the news stories that I will be sharing with you. Again, if you have any questions or comments concerning these stories or any other news stories that you think we should be made abreast of, you can give us a call at 704-802-5056, 704-802-5056. Hit ** to put yourself in the caller's queue. Of course, I like to share music during this broadcast, and I want to play some Craig Mack as a tribute to the young man. And I say young man, he was only 46 years old, so he was younger than me. And apparently he passed away from heart failure sometime today or last night. He didn't really blow up to become this big, you know, rap star or anything like that. But he was one of the first acts that was signed by the New York label, P. Diddy owns, Bad Boy Records. And so Craig Mack passed away. I heard he had walked away from, you know, the whole rap scene a while ago and had become very, I don't know what word I should use, religious or very spiritual. But unfortunately, it appears that he was a part of this religious organization in South Carolina where the pastor or the leader of that organization was busted for sexual child abuse and what have you. So, but yeah, you know, Craig Mack did pass away, and we just want to recognize his contributions to hip hop. So let's go ahead and cue up some Craig Mack. This is Craig Mack's, I believe this is his only hit track he ever had, and that's Flavor in Your Ear.
Yo, Mac, I don't even understand how they didn't understand you and that Mary joint.
Yeah, I
kick
know,
that
man.
Old robotic, futuristic George Jetson.
Yeah,
crazy
joint. Down, high, just high. Like Uniblab, robotic kicking flab. A flavor bit of batter, chitter chatter, madder than the mad hatter. I bet your boss come by fatter. I got the data to turn your body into antimatter. And just like a piece of sizzling, you'll fit inside my stomach with the eggs and grits between. The king is what I mean. My man, get a cup and put some change inside your hand. Now hold up, let's make this official. Everybody, let's agree that MCs need a tissue. The folks my only issue. I bet your mama miss you, and I bet the Mac take off like an MX missile. No more of you whining on the charts climbing as I make the funk kicking out more harder than a diamond. And if you didn't know who's rhyming, I guess I'm gonna say Craig Mack with perfect timing. You won't be around next year. My rap's too severe, kicking mad flavor in your ear. Here comes the brand new flavor in your ear. Time for new flavor in your ear. I'm kicking new flavor in your ear. Mack's brand new flavor in your ear. Craig Mack, 1,000 degrees. You'll be on your knees and you'll be burning, begging, please. Brother Freeze, man's undisputed and deep-rooted. Funk smoke that leaves your brains booted. This bad MC with stamina like Bruce Jenner. The winner takes an MC's for dinner.
You're crazy like that glue. That think that you can outdo my 1-2. That's sick like the flu. Shake them down, boy. I flip, boy, all the time. And cuss, boy, the project kicking ain't worth a dime. Seems like there's no competition in this rap world expedition. You come around, I knock you out position. Knock them out. No flame could ever dig a grave. Both the Mac, the power pack in black, make you see man crap. And here comes a brand new flavor in your air. Max, a brand new flavor in your air. Here comes a brand new flavor in your air. Time for new flavor in your air. I'm kicking new flavor in your air. Max, brand new flavor in your air. Here comes a brand new flavor in your air. Time for new flavor in your air. I'm kicking new flavor in your air. Max, brand new flavor in your air. Hi, Max, dope. With more hope than the Pope, but for MCs, more knots than rope. I'd like to break it down, down, breaking, forsaking laws of MC shaking with this track that my man's making. MCs will run like a bomb threat, I bet, what? Or better yet, make you sweat, getting hotter than the sun get. Yep. Craig Mack is the play that bumps from here to Tibet. Boy. I break all rules with my action, that the Mack sends the MC stop relaxing. This brand new sheriff that's in town, is getting down, leaving bodies buried in the ground. I set up rhymes for a decoy down for bad boy, watch the MC not destroy. And here comes the brand new flavor in your ear.
Right, that was Craig Mack. May he rest in power, and condolences out to his family and his friends. All right, now I'm sitting here wondering, though, as I get a flashback to when Craig Mack first came out, I was thinking to myself that, hey, I can't really understand what this brother be saying sometimes. So I'm wondering if Craig Mack gave birth to what's now called mumble rap. You know, they got this stuff called mumble rap where I guess the rapper's mumbling and you don't really understand what he's saying. But, you know, Craig Mack, I don't know if we would call him a pioneer, but he definitely made a contribution to hip hop. All right, first story. Let's get to this first story. The most despised woman on the face of the planet. Especially I despise this woman, and I did everything in my power to let people know who she truly is and the damage that her and her husband, one Bill Clinton, did to the black community. And so, you know, she, as everybody knows, lost the 2016 presidential election to a reality show host. All right. And, you know, a political novice, someone who had never even run for dog catcher before, and she lost to him. And instead of her being a true leader and just saying, I lost, she's going around making all these excuses. The most dangerous excuse that she's making, which is also a lie, a very dangerous lie, is that the Trump campaign colluded with Russians to deny her the White House, which is a bunch of garbage. Anybody believe that, you know, I would say you might need to go talk to somebody, or you might need to, you know, get more news sources than Rachel Maddow on MSNBC. But this is straight up garbage. She took a trip to India. Again, she's out there selling her book. I think it's called Shattered or something like that. I'm not sure what the name of. Oh, What Happened? That's the name of her book. What a crazy title. What Happened? And now she's out there forever the opportunities, forever the little greedy grub that she is, out there pushing this book, profiting from her loss to Donald Trump. But she's in India promoting this book. And they're saying, this comes to you from Fox News, says Hillary Clinton's trip to India is evoking memories from her failed 2016 bid for president, as the Democrat makes headlines for blaming racism and misogyny for her loss while taking stumbles in front of the camera. So, I mean, this is just how crazy this is. This woman is a racist. The evidence shows that she's a racist. She once famously or infamously called black children and brown children super predators. She has frequently blown racist dog whistles throughout her president's, her husband's political career. And certainly during her political career, she has blown these racist dog whistles. So how the hell is a racist going to blame racism for the reason that she lost? It's just, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't add up. It must not be true. And misogyny. She's going to blame misogyny when she was a misogynist enabler of her husband, who many women, just like Donald Trump, many women came forward with stories of Bill Clinton sexually assaulting them, raping them. And Hillary Clinton did not stand up for those women. And of course, we know she never divorced Bill Clinton, even after he admitted, or it was widely known, I think he's admitting it now, that he has sexual relations with that woman. I forget that woman's name right now. I just saw an article or two about her. She's been speaking out and talking about the power dynamic between a president and a little young White House intern and what have you. Monica Lewinsky, that's her name. Hillary Clinton attack Monica Lewinsky. Okay? And now we also know that when she ran against Obama, where she blew plenty of racist dog whistles concerning Barack Obama. Did y'all forget about that? How the racist campaign she ran in 2008 against trying to secure the Democratic nomination when she was up against Barack Obama. Have y'all forgotten? I tell you, some people got some short memories, especially black women, who she enjoys the most support among. But during those campaigns, her quote-unquote spiritual advisor, who was a so-called Christian, and I think he was also a pastor of a church, but he was busted sexually harassing a young teenager who had volunteered for Hillary Clinton's campaign. And when it was brought to her attention and her top aides recommended that she fire the guy, she did not fire the guy. And they kept all of this under wraps and quiet. And he was even part of her 2016 campaign team until finally he was pushed out. So to blame racism and misogyny for her, for a racist and an enabler of misogyny to be out here talking about that's why I lost, it's ludicrous. It's laughable. And you should laugh at her. I know I would. Goes on to say, during her appearance in India over the weekend, Clinton claimed she lost the 2016 presidential race in part because white women didn't stand up to the men in their lives, pressuring them to vote for Donald Trump. We do not do well with white men, and we don't do well with married white women. And when she says we, who the heck is she talking about? Who is she talking about? We don't do well with white men, and we don't do well. Is she talking about Hillary Clinton and her whole campaign, or is she talking about Democrats? That's unclear here. She went on to say at this conference in Mumbai, India, and part of that is an identification with the Republican Party and a sort of ongoing pressure to vote the way that your husband and your boss and your son and whoever believes you should. So again, this is all garbage. This is all garbage. So you mean to tell me that in 2008, when white women picked Barack Obama over Hillary Clinton, that the white men in their lives told them, didn't pressure them into not voting for a black person? Huh? I mean, really? Is that what she want us to believe? That when Barack Obama went up against John McCain, that those same white men, were they pressuring their white women to not vote for Barack Obama? Which they did in a majority of numbers, as opposed to voting for John McCain? I don't think so. So why should you believe this now? And it's really an insult to white women, in my opinion. It's an insult to them. And then it holds no water. Number one, was her source of information. She's really, really good at making claims to the public without any evidence or credible sources of information. When you go into the ballot box, it's just you in that ballot. Their husbands weren't allowed, or their boyfriends or fathers or sons wasn't allowed to go into the voting booth with them and ensure that they voted for Donald Trump. So they could have voted for whoever the heck they wanted to, because the ballot is secret. Nobody would have known. So again, this is just being critical thinking, people. Using critical thinking. Does this make any sense? Does this claim make any sense to you? Does it hold any water? It holds none. It holds none whatsoever. And I wish this woman would just go away and just admit that she is one of the worst politicians in the history of politics in the United States, that she has so much baggage that even white women didn't want her. Okay, so I don't know how long black people are going to keep subscribing to the lives of these Clintons, especially when they have done so much damage to the black family worldwide. I just don't know why black people continue to pay this woman any mind whatsoever. So that's the latest lie that she's out there with and out there trying to push her book and saying that these white men bullied these white women into voting for Donald Trump, and that's why they didn't vote for me. I mean, she really can't make up her mind. Which is it, Hillary? Was it Russian trolls paying for Facebook ads or Twitter ads as to why you lost? Was it collusion? Did Putin kick those 200,000 voters off the rolls in Brooklyn? Is that, or is it white men bullied white women into voting for Trump? Which is it? She can't make up her mind. Probably all of the above in her mind, but it's all a lie. All right, next story. Let's move on to the next story. Really don't like this woman. I think she's very disgusting and very dangerous. Now, this next story, we had, you know, quite a bit of exchanges on BTR community about this story. Before we hit the top of the hour and we take another music break, I want to share this story with you that came out from the Chicago Tribune, which states that researchers are unclear why suicide is increasing among black children. Well, right off the bat, I can tell you one of the reasons, in my opinion, before I get into the article, is that black people, for the most part, don't have access to mental health treatment. We were just like, you know, we disproportionately are affected by poor health care or access to health care. We really don't, you know, for the most part, don't have the same access to the same kind of health care that wealthy, well-to-do Americans get. So I'm sure that the same goes for mental health. That we are not getting the proper mental health treatment that we need, considering the extra pressure that we are under living in a historically racist society. I readily admit that I suffer from traumatic stress, reading all these stories about racism and what have you, and what has occurred to me over the course of my life, or I witness occur to others. It's very, 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 very stressful. That's why outlets like Black Talk Radio Network is needed, so that we can relieve this stress and talk about it. But let me read the story. It says, after 11-year-old Ryland Hagen hanged himself with a belt from his bunk bed 3 days before Thanksgiving, people wanted to know why he did it. He was a model sixth grader at Perry Street Prep in Northeast Washington, where he received a stipend to tutor other students. He was a basketball player whose team had just qualified for a tournament at Walt Disney World. He also played the trumpet. Standing in the room where her only child had taken his life less than 2 months earlier, the question tortured Natalia Chambers. The apartment where she had not slept since his death was in disarray, belongings spilling out of boxes as she prepared to search for a new start. He was the perfect son, she said. Very smart. He was happy. So far as I know of. Ryland appears to be the youngest person to take his own life in Washington since at least 2013. Though data for last year isn't available, and the idea that a child so young would commit suicide is unfathomable to most. But in January this year, another African-American child, 12-year-old Stormaya Denson Jackson, apparently hanged herself in the dormitory of her charter school in Southeast Washington. In a city that records a preteen suicide about every other year, two such deaths weeks apart were particularly jarring. Says nationwide, suicides among Black children under 18 are up 71% in the past 10 years. Let me read that again. Nationwide, suicides among Black children under 18 are up 71% in the past decade, rising from 86 suicides in 2006 to 147 suicides in 2016. The latest year such data is available from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. In that same 10-year period, the suicide rate among all children also increased, up 64%. So what we're looking at here is a 7% difference between other children and Black children. And I would say, regardless of these children's designation in this racist society, whether they Black, white, or whatever, this is very alarming, and it should be alarming to all of us. Why are American children killing themselves like this? What is causing, what has happened in the last 10 years to cause Black children in particular to kill themselves? The researchers don't know. They don't seem to know. They can't seem to put their finger on it. And I would have to say it's probably a variety of reasons. There's probably plenty of variables, and you have to examine it on a case-by-case basis. But it would point to something. Something is for all of these children to be killing themselves at such alarming rates in the past 10 years. It's something that's going on in this society. This is a very sick society. Researchers, I'm going back to the story, researchers aren't sure what has fueled the slightly larger rise for black children. Some speculate that those affected by racism might be at greater risk. Another factor could be the notion that suicide isn't a problem in the black community, hindering prevention efforts. I would say that, again, we had to judge it on a case-by-case basis, but if you're talking about black children, the number one variable you got to be looking at is racism. You have to. Okay? I mean, if adults are having problems in dealing with racism in this society, imagine what children are going through. Okay? So, this part about, I can only speak for myself. I can only speak for what I see in my household or what I see in my community. And when I say my community, I'm talking about those who are in a close proximity to me that live in the same community that I live in. This notion that suicide isn't a problem in the black community, to be honest with you, I can't even recall ever talking about suicide in a community setting here in this community, nor talking about suicide in our household, because no one in our family has ever, or that we know in this community, has ever committed suicide. So it's not something that we talked about. In terms of them saying that, you know, in the black community that we look at as a people that, you know, oh, black people just don't kill themselves. I can't speak on that. I don't know where their source of information is. I'm not aware of any polls or surveys that asked us whether we believe suicide is a problem. I just simply don't know. Now, it goes on to say among the youngest children, suicide for those 13 and under rose 114% from 2006 to 2016. In a bright spot for black youth, the rate of growth in this age group rose more slowly at 30%. I don't call that a bright spot. I think you need to find some other kind of words to describe that. Chambers was on the phone with her son on November the 20th, not long before he ended his life. She was getting a Thanksgiving donation basket at the Salvation Army when Ryland told her he was frustrated with a malfunctioning printer at their box-like one-bedroom apartment where they share a room. When she called his phone again, he didn't answer. When she entered the apartment, she called his name and he didn't answer. She looked in the bathroom, he wasn't there. Then she went into the bedroom. She tried loosening the belt. This is when she finds that her son was dead. Now, as I think it was I'm forgetting her name right now. But anyway, she's a member of the BTR community. She did raise an important point that should be considered because this story doesn't sound right. She was on the phone with him. You know, he hadn't shown any kind of depression or anything. He was frustrated with a printer and he's going to kill himself because he couldn't get a printer to work. And like she pointed out, though, how many of these are murders? And I think that's something that we should consider is that, hey, maybe some of these things aren't suicides and some of these are murders. Okay? So I think it is something that we need to focus more on as families to have these conversations with our young children. Definitely plan on talking to my daughters, about talking to my grandchildren about this, because you just never know. You never know what's going on with children unless they tell you or you talk to them about it. You know, I remember this very sad story, and I think this girl was only 8 years old. Little black girl hung herself because she was being bullied at school by other children. So there are just so many variables to consider in this. But this is a terrible, terrible development if these reports and these statistics are true, that black children are increasingly, again, they're saying up 71% in the past decade. And if we're talking 13 and under, 114%, that's a crisis. That's a crisis, and we need to act like it's a crisis, and we need to strategize about solutions and how we're going to deal with this in our community. So I am reaching out to a couple of child psychologists and psychologists in general to do a couple of programs on focusing this on this issue. You know, how do we talk to children about something like suicide? I'm not sure my five-year-old grandson who just left the house, who y'all might have heard beating on my window trying to tell me bye, I'm not even sure he can grasp the concept of suicide. So definitely need some direction on how to properly talk about suicide with our children. So again, that's posted in BTR community. It is in the BTR news thread for 313 inside of BTRcommunity.com. All right, going to take another break, take a station identification break and a short music break, and then we'll come back and I will try to be more quick in dealing with some of these other stories. Coming back from the break, we'll talk about police saying that they have gotten 150 plus suspicious packages calls since those deadly package bombings in Austin, which is the capital city of Texas. And it could be, and authorities aren't saying this, this is me saying this, it could be because of white terrorism, because it appears that all the targets have been black people. All right, so want to look at that story when we come back. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed, broadcasting live every Tuesday night at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. Stay tuned. We'll be back on the other side.
Hi. The Black Talk Media Project would like to invite you to become a member of the BTR Community subscription-based social media platform. BTR Community is a platform that was set up for the listening audience of Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent Black radio network online. For just $24 per year, your subscription gives you access to an interactive space to share information with like-minded people with your privacy guaranteed. Your subscription will go a long way to help us maintain and improve our current media platforms. It will also help provide a budget so that we can begin the task of establishing localized media centers and radio stations across the United States. The best way to show your support and appreciation for what we do here at Black Talk Radio is to subscribe. Help us to help you be informed. Join BTRcommunity.com today.
Back to life, back to reality, back to life, back to reality. Tell me maybe I
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Again, if you have a question or a comment on any of these stories, give us a call at 704-802-5056. Hit the star key twice to put yourself in the caller's queue. So, you may have heard, it hasn't really, I don't watch television that much. I definitely don't watch any of the news programming that comes on television. If I need to know something, I'll find out about it over the internet, and I'll see the clips or whatever. I'll see somebody else writing about the story or sharing the story. I don't spend a lot of time in front of that square box. I just don't, and haven't for quite some time. So I don't know how this is being reported nationally on your national news programs, but you may have heard about these package bombings that have been happening in Texas. Austin Police Chief Brian Manley, according to this article, is defending his department's statements that initially downplayed the first of three package bombs that went off in the city as an isolated incident. So, again, I will say, you got a package bomb blowing up and killing American citizens. How is that not terrorism? These are that by itself would be enough to classify it as an act of terrorism without even knowing who did it. It's still an act of terrorism. Terrorists blow people up, right? And they describe, oh, this is just an isolated incident. Nothing to worry about. Nobody else has to worry about anything. Now, Manley, this is Brian Manley, who is the Austin police chief, said Tuesday that investigators at the same time were working under the theory that a March 2nd package bomb was related to a nearby house used to stash drugs that police busted a few days earlier. The explosion killed a 39-year-old Austin man. So, yeah, let's just blame it on black people and drugs, right? That's what we're going to blame it on. How is the two even related? After two more explosions happened Monday, this was yesterday, police were criticized for not warning Austin residents to be on the lookout for suspicious packages. A second blast killed a 17-year-old teenager, and a third one wounded a 75-year-old woman. Now, in the wake of these three terrorist bombings, authorities say they have received 265 calls about suspicious packages since the two explosions on Monday. None turned out to be a threat. Let me just say this before I move on to this next section. Somebody leaves a package on your porch and you don't know where it came from, call the police. Call, let them get blowed up. Don't you go out there messing with it and getting blown up. I know these sort of things are the last things on our minds. We don't expect people to, you know, be targeting us with bombs, leaving bombs on our porches and whatnot. So I understand, but I'm saying, this is why I opened up the program by saying we live behind enemy lines. This is why I be hoping that you are in relative safety when you hear the sound of my voice over these digital airwaves. Because we live in a war zone. The entire United States is a war zone. People, casualties being created every day. So it's just very suspicious. If you didn't order anything, if you weren't expecting a package, be very suspicious, people. Be very, very suspicious of these type of things. You know, they even have the capabilities to make letter bombs. All right, so Now, a leader of the black community, and they're talking about Nelson Linder, who is the longtime president of the NAACP chapter in Austin. He said on Tuesday that the two victims are related to well-known members of the black community in Texas capital city. Authorities, it goes on to name the victims. It says 17-year-old Draylen Mason was killed Monday by an explosive left on his doorstep. The teen died nearly 2 weeks after 39-year-old Anthony Stephen House was killed by a similar package. Linder says he doesn't believe in coincidences. I have to agree with Linder. I don't believe in coincidence either. So we got three people who have been killed or injured by package bombs left on their front porches. That's not a coincidence. And they're black. No, that's no coincidence. This is a terrorist campaign that's going on. And it needs to be treated as such. And it's not being treated as such. And you can tell by this man's initial reaction, this Brian Manley, that black lives don't matter to him. Oh, it's just an isolated incident. Just a nigga got blowed up. Nothing to worry about. And so they don't say nothing to the public. They don't warn the public. And now you have two more bombings. Now, he went on to say, I believe it was him, because I'm not seeing it in this particular report. Yeah, it was him. He did suggest that the attacks could constitute a hate crime. Now, we're getting into what's known as political correctness here. I've never agreed with hate crime legislation. I just simply didn't see any need for it. And I don't see any need for hate crime charges in this case if they find out who did it or what group of people was behind it. Terrorism will do, and terrorism is more applicable. Nobody kills anyone because they love them. So it's pretty stupid to say, hey, these are crimes that are based on hate. All right? I just can't wrap my mind around that. I feel like it's a way to call stuff that is terrorism, not calling it terror. Oh, it's a hate crime. No, it's an act of terrorism, an act of racist terrorism. Treat it as such. Perhaps if they declare these acts as terrorism, then they might be forced to put these white supremacist groups on terrorist watch lists and go after them like they go after so-called members of ISIS or people who are sympathetic to ISIS here in the United States or Al-Qaeda or what have you. No, these aren't hate crimes. These are acts of terrorism is what they are. And it just goes to show you the white supremacist, racist society that we live in, that they're not calling this terrorism and they're not treating it as terrorism. So again, as I stated, all the victims were black. And I suspect white supremacist terrorists to be behind this. So again, as I have already stated, you see a suspicious package on your porch, don't pick it up. Don't try to open it. Don't poke at it with a stick or nothing like that. Call the police, let them do their job. Let them put their lives at risk. And if it turned out to be nothing, it turned out to be nothing. But please be careful. Be on high alert. I'm always on high alert behind these enemy lines, especially if I leave my house. I'm on high alert. I'm always on high alert, especially since I live next door to a black church. Remember all those churches was getting burned up not that long ago? So I try to keep an eye out on that church, even though I don't go to church. But, hey, people in my community go to that church, so I'm going to look out for it. Stay on high alert, people. We live behind enemy lines, and people are dying. All right, that's that story. Let me move on. Let me see what's next. What's the next story that we have? Okay, this next story. Came across this article about this exhibit that is being shown at the National Museum of the American Indian. And the new exhibit or exhibition is called Americans. This story comes to you from SmithsonianMag.com. Came across it, 2 days ago is when I saw the article. It was actually published last week. Says how Native American slaveholders complicate the Trail of Tears narrative. The new exhibition, Americans, at the National Museum of the American Indian, prompts a deeper dive for historic truths. Let me just read a little bit. It was written by Ryan P. Smith. Says that when you think of the Trail of Tears, you likely imagine a long procession of suffering Cherokee Indians forced westward by the villainous Andrew Jackson. Now, this was, of course, before the Civil War. Perhaps you envision, or Jackson time was, perhaps you envision unscrupulous white slaveholders whose interest in growing a plantation economy underlay the decision to expel the Cherokee, flooding in to take their place east of the Mississippi River. What you probably don't picture are Cherokee slaveholders, foremost among them, Cherokee Chief John Ross. What you probably don't picture are the newest African-American victims of slavery, Cherokee-owned, who made the brutal march themselves, or else were shipped en masse to what is now Oklahoma aboard cramped boats by their wealthy Indian masters. And what you may not know is that the federal policy of Indian removal, which ranged far beyond the Trail of Tears in the Cherokee, was not simply the vindictive scheme of Andrew Jackson, but rather a popularly endorsed, congressionally sanctioned campaign spanning the administrations of 9 separate presidents. These uncomfortable complications in the narrative were brought to the forefront at a recent event held at the National Museum of the American Indian titled Finding Common Ground. The symposium offered a deep dive into intersectional African American and Native American history. And I was thinking the same thing. This is the enslavement of Africans by Cherokee. It's black history. It's part of black history on this continent. All right. On this continent. And we just simply have not talked about it. Period. I don't ever recall having these conversations or being a witness to conversations had about the Cherokee role in enslavement or any of the 5 so-called civilized tribes who willingly gave up their own culture and adopted the European culture, living in houses, wearing, you know, European clothing and all that, and then emulating these Europeans in the slave trade. We just simply don't talk about it. And we give them a pass. And I think that they don't need no pass to be given no passes. I feel that the Cherokee Nation, with all their casino money, should be paying reparations. And their tribal leaders are also racist. They tried, I don't know if y'all remember the story, they tried to expel the descendants of their victims of slavery from the Cherokee Nation, tried to strip them of their Cherokee Nation citizenship, which would entitle them to whatever benefits that gives a Cherokee, whether that's a piece of the casino money, whether that's any land in Oklahoma. They tried to kick them out. Well, actually, they did kick them out. I think that's been resolved. I think they still got membership in there. But again, I feel like they owe reparations. We can't talk about reparations and white people without talking about these so-called five civilized tribes, but they are often left out of the narrative. So I give the National Museum of the American Indian big ups for not continuing to allow this piece of history to be hidden. Now, when I started to come into the knowledge of these Eastern Indian tribes practicing racism and practicing slavery against black people, I then began to understand, among other reasons, why after the Civil War, many black federal troops had no problem with killing Indians in the West and helping to take their land. I'm talking about the Buffalo Soldier. Buffalo Soldier, for those that don't know, that's the name that was given to the black troops by the Apache, Indians. I actually used to be stationed at Fort Huachuca, which is in Arizona, at the base of the Cochise Mountain, which is named after Chief Cochise, who black troops helped hunt down. And I just couldn't understand that. I was like, why would you help these racists, white folks, kill non-white people? But then I said, wait a minute. Because the only thing they knew of Indians during their time is the ones that was enslaving other black people. So as far as they were concerned, all Indians are the same, and they weren't recognizing the different tribes. And I'm just, of course, I'm speculating here because there's no Buffalo Soldier living today for me to interview and to ask, why? Why did you help these racist people kill all those non-white people? The Apaches didn't do anything to you. The Comanches didn't do anything to you. The Navajo didn't do anything to you. Why? And that's the only thing I could come up with, is the mistreatment of black people at the hands of these Cherokee and these other tribes. Because part of Civil War history is the Cherokee Indians, not all of them, but the majority of them, sided with the Confederacy because they want to keep practicing slavery too. So they joined the Confederacy. So I got to look at it. I have to then reevaluate how I look at the Buffalo Soldier through that lens and knowing and discovering how these Cherokee, a bunch of racists practicing slavery, just like the European that they was definitely trying to emulate. So again, shout out to the National Museum of the American Indian for putting together this exhibit so that we can talk about this. So again, I say, man, that, everybody ain't our allies and everybody is not our friends. And we don't talk about reparations being owed reparations by the United States government. I say throw the Cherokee Nation in there too. That's what I say. They don't get let off the hook. Not in my opinion, they shouldn't be. So let me share a little bit more. For museum curator Paul Chad Smith, who is a Comanche, and the Comanches did practice slavery. Again, I started studying not just slavery as it relates to African people on this continent, but just slavery as an institution on this continent. The Comanche did practice slavery, but it wasn't against black folks. It was against other Indian nations that they was at war with. And it was a different kind of slavery than what the Cherokee and others was practicing. The Comanche, if they captured you, you were given the status of a slave and you were brutally treated. But you were also given an opportunity to join or become a Comanche, regardless of your tribal, prior tribal affiliation, regardless of your skin color or whatever. If you survived this brutal initiation ceremony, then you could become a full-fledged Comanche. All right? So again, slavery was being practiced. Indians had been enslaving each other before Europeans even got here. I just like the facts. You know what I'm saying? I like studying all the facts and learning as much as I can. The article goes on to say, for museum curator Paul Chad Smith, who has overseen the design and opening of the widely lauded Americans exhibition now on view on the museum's third floor, it is imperative to provide the museum going public with an unflinching history. Even when doing so is painful. I used to like history, Smith told the crowd ruefully, and sometimes I still do, but not most of the time. Most of the time, history and I are frenemies at best. In the case of the Trail of Tears and the enslavement of blacks by prominent members of all five so-called civilized tribes, the Cherokee, the Chickasaw, the Choctaw, the Creek, and the Seminole, Smith went one step further, likening the ugly truth of history to a mangy, snarling dog standing between you and a crowd-pleasing narrative. So, you know, I had, again, already knew this history about the Cherokee, Chickasaw, Choctaw, Creek, and Seminole. And it was just weird to me that some black people, again, everybody's entitled to their opinion, and I'm not saying this in an adversarial type way, but there is conversations among black people that we need to change our status, and as if changing your status is going to get you better treatment in a system of white supremacy. And I know that some of them will be like, you know, we need to claim Choctaw or we Choctaw or this or that. And I'm like, guess what? Choctaw practiced slavery. So you being a Choctaw, you just might be a descendant of victims of slavery. Because some people, for some reason, they don't want that label. I'm not a descendant of victims of slavery and this and that. I'm indigenous and all this and that. Well, guess what? Indigenous tribes practiced slavery too. Yes, they did. So, this is history, as he says, Mr. Smith says, these are stories that need to be told. These are things that society or the public needs to know about. It's not no feel-good story, but it's an important story. It's part of the American narrative. It is part of the American experience. All right, so I got just a couple of more stories to get to. I have posted a video. Let me see if I can get the name of it for you. It's in the video section of blacktalkradionetwork.com. I want to give you the exact title. Here it is. New exhibit, Americans, focuses on American Indians, African Americans, in slavery. And you will find a video of this guy who put together this exhibit where he is talking about Indians and African descendant people and, you know, just the struggle in general and where we have common ground in our struggle against racism and white supremacy. So if you want to check that video out, it is posted on blacktalkradionetwork.com. New exhibit, Americans, focuses on American Indians, African Americans, and slavery. All right, I'm going to take another station identification break. And when we come back, I got two more stories that I want to share with you. Actually, it's three more stories. I'll try to get to them all. We got this story. The Saudi royal family and diplomats have been enslaving people in the USA. And then we also got this racism against Africans in Israel. Majority of Jews in Israel practice racism against Africans inside of Israel. And the last story is that story out of Senegal about these little children who are being kidnapped and sold into slavery or being murdered. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News again. This live broadcast goes out every Tuesday at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. But you can follow Black Talk Radio News with Scotty Reed on blacktalkradionetwork.com as I do issue podcasts just about every other day. Sometimes I might issue several a day just depending upon what time, how much time I have on my hands. All right, we'll be back on the other side.
The state of hip-hop is awful, straight terrible. It promotes death and destruction now. The original principles of hip-hop culture is peace, unity, love, and having fun. The principles of what we call slave hip-hop is violence, chaos, hate, and danger. Slave hip-hop must be abolished, and we must save African people from this nonsense and bring hip-hop back to where it used to be.
Time to get funky and radical hip as I get to the point. Rock this funky joint. Wait a sec. The teacher's got to check the intellect. But I'm accepting. Didn't give you it. But give you what? The beaver or the chief. I often come to dish it up. But must I be just enough to manifest? The fabric mathematics might be that of Asiatic. Rock the doors, attract the static. Then that you're rocking through my concept. Now I got to stand for this. For this why? Civilized it. Hip hop rhyme from a black mind. To kicking it to you all the time. I salam. You like a more of peace sign. My way of life and this be that of Islam. I take my time, think before I manifest a rhyme. Sharp and accurate to stop the music on a dime. Knowledge me, acapella, wisdom G, I'm manifesting. Understanding, understood, so there's no need for I keep your guessing. Follow me now, see I be rocking. The second hand is kicking, still the posse don't be clocking. Controllers of the clock be ticking closer to the point. Rock this funky joint, keep joint. The stammer step, the style that I use, went up rather rapidly. PRT posse backing me, easy now, star. You know exactly who we are. For righteous teachers, try be PRT for sure. Now don't want more. Or am I too much with a mentor? Proceed, teacher, please. Just keep it sort of simple like hip hop. You complicatedly, I place it according to the moods of my intellect. Step for step, I step a little closer to the point. Rock this funky joint. But I'm your teacher, I teach ya. Rocker when I rock ya. The king I call for moves, a different style of hip hop. Smooth like a wise word, spoken from a prophet. Rough like a slave trying to get away. See, I'm combined with two kinds of rhyme trying to reach ya. The knowledge of my stuff makes me a poor righteous teacher. Stop to flip the topic, Islamically I drop it. My duty be to teach, so keep your pistol in your pocket. Myself, Lord and master, traveling faster as I get closer to the point. Rock this funky joint, keep joint. Funky.
top of it. I have to get the styles that you be seeking and the words that I be speaking. Poor righteous teachers, posse teaching. Anyone that likes this style that I be styling, mentally profiling. Should I say I'm smooth with the roughness, just serving justice. Suckers try to suck this, but I be scoping. Never, I'm not sleeping, because it's culture freedom. G, who's posse ruling? PRG. Bird B. It's sort of simple, see? Now look at me, the holy intellectual type. When I write, the spirit always keeps me something hype. I pet the mic, yo, cause it's my whole life. Like I'm creating, man, I beat the states in. Can I say I'm great when there's not another brother greater? Turn a culture freedom for support. G-manifest the point.
Rock this funky joint. Keep joint.
Rock funky.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News with Scotty Reed, and on this broadcast from behind these enemy lines that I call USA Inc. So I came across this story, very troubling story, about this woman who was being enslaved. She's from Eritrea, which is a country in Africa. I think it used to be part of Ethiopia at one time. But I know, you know, that's where it's located, in that part of Africa. And she was being enslaved by some Saudi Arabians right here in the United States, which never stopped practicing slavery. Every opportunity I can mention that, I will mention that. Read the 13th Amendment. Don't take my word for it. United States never stopped practicing slavery. You can also ask the NCAA about it, since in a lawsuit to pay student athletes as work study students and give them a piece of that $1 billion pie. They cited the 13th Amendment as a reason they shouldn't have to pay student athletes, even as work study students or what have you. So, this is the illegal kind of slavery. This is the type of slavery that has been outlawed. You know, it's okay for, well, it's not okay. But what I mean to say is, it's legal for the federal government, the state government, and contractors, private prisons who are contracting with the federal government to practice slavery, because that's in the Constitution, and the 13th Amendment legalized that. All right. But you can't go out there and enslave someone. I can't kidnap some woman, child, or whatever off the street and bring them to my house and force them to be my maid or something, or houseboy or whatever. I'll go to jail. I'll go to prison for that. But we got these Saudi Arabians, which wasn't surprising to me, knowing how they practice and mistreat domestic workers inside of Saudi Arabia. It's not surprising to me that they thought they could do it here. And before I say and get away with it, it appears they are going to get away with it, meaning they haven't been charged criminally because they got this diplomatic status. So I'm going to run this report from RT about it. This woman who was hired as a nanny, but she was enslaved by a Saudi royal family. So let me go ahead and cue that up, let you give a listen to it.
A Saudi Arabian royal family living in Falls Church, Virginia, is being accused of forcing a woman into slavery. The lawsuit says the woman worked more than 15 hours a day, wasn't allowed to leave the royal family's home without supervision, and repeatedly called a whore, a donkey, colored, and garbage. Joining me now to talk about this is RT correspondent Brigida Santos. Brigida, what? This is another one of those crazy stories that you take a look at and you say it's really more important than just this particular story. But what is the story in this case?
An Eritrean citizen named Simrit Tikwal has filed a complaint against a married couple from the House of Saud, the Saudi royal family. Now, Ms. Tikwal alleges that they trafficked her to the United States and held her there and made her serve as a slave. Now, she had signed a contract, which unfortunately she could not read. It was written in Arabic, but she was told that it was a contract for employment in which she would be serving as a nanny to one of the children belonging to this family in Virginia. Now, she was told she would be working 40 hours per week, that she would get 2 days off, and she would earn a salary of $4,500 per month. But when she arrived in Virginia, her passport was taken away. She was taken to the house where she was a servant for six children, as well as the family, the parents, and she was paid about $400 to $500 per month, working 80 hours per week, doing all kinds of physical labor jobs, things that were not in her contract. Now, she says that she could not escape because she was under constant surveillance. There were cameras all throughout the house, including in her bedroom, and there was an armed guard present at all times who threatened her with deportation if she tried to escape. Now, luckily, she did escape one day when a driver ditched her. He was supposed to be watching her, but unfortunately, he did not. And it was lucky for her because she was able to escape. And now she's filed this complaint, and she is asking for a jury trial, Mike.
Well, you know, no question, there won't be criminals. I mean, these are the Saudi Arabian family. We're afraid to say this, but we understand that Saudi, or the same group, financed the group that killed 3,000 Americans. We know that. We know what happened on 9/11. We understand the Saudis were involved. Nobody has been held responsible for that. This woman, you know, the idea of her going to a police station and saying, gee whiz, shouldn't there be some kind of criminal charges here, is almost impossible to visualize. Is there any reaction by the royal family, and do they know if they're still do we know if they're still living in the U.S. after this complaint was filed?
There has been no comment from the Saudi royal family, and in fact, they have not been available for reporters at all. Now, we don't know whether they are still living here, but it's very likely that they are, because they are residents of Virginia and their children go to school here, and they really have no reason to flee because they do enjoy broad diplomatic immunity from any types of crimes, Mike.
Yeah, I think this, again, this story compared to the Saudis financing the murder of 3,000 Americans is, you know, you can't make a comparison. But you can make a comparison to the conduct of the U.S. government. We know it was very clear that the Saudis were involved in killing 3,000 Americans, that the government actually helped sneak those people out of the United States that they thought, the Saudis, they thought might have been involved, and into a safe place called home. This woman is an immigrant. Do you know if the U.S. courts will factor this in as she and her lawyer pursue this case? In other words, does this situation have any precedent at all?
There is no precedent, and in fact, many people have filed complaints against members of the Saudi royal family, diplomats. This includes immigrants as well as U.S. citizens, and most of those cases, if not all of them, have been dropped due to the fact that they get this broad diplomatic immunity. So I don't know if the courts are going to factor in the fact that she is an immigrant, but if they do, I don't think it will end well for her, especially because the United States and Saudi Arabia are such close allies. It's unlikely that we're suddenly going to start prosecuting members of the royal family here.
All right, I'm going to end the report there because we're kind of running out of time. But remember, all these CEOs of USA Inc., they go over there to bow to the Saudi king, and they get all these gifts of gold. So I forgot how much that gold jewelry that Hillary Clinton was given by the Saudis, how much that cost. But she isn't the only one who has gotten such lavish gifts from the House of Saud. But I wrote a little essay because this isn't anything new. These stories have been coming out for years. What I didn't find is what the Eritrean government has to say. I didn't include this particular story in the list of stories that I put, and I'll read what I wrote for the listening audience, for those that have not seen the little expose I wrote. I don't even know if I should call it an expose, just a little blog I wrote highlighting this problem. But a couple of days ago, what it was, I couldn't find the video again, but I believe it was Kenya. It was Kenya, if I'm not mistaken, who issued some new rules or something in terms of their people working in Saudi Arabia. I know the Philippines had said something as well. I believe a Filipino woman was murdered and stuffed into a ice box, you know, like a refrigerator freezer type deal. She was shoved into that. That maniac, the mad dog Duterte, the president of Philippines, he said, you know, something about Philippines are not going to be your slaves or something like that. He's a mass murderer, but let me not get sidetracked. So this is what I wrote. I said, slavery is and has been a cultural practice of Arabians who drove the Arab slave trade. It is no surprise that slavery is still practiced by citizens of Saudi Arabia, including members of their royal families. While Tiffany Sirak Hadish, who is an American comedian and actress whose father is from Eritrea, was generating an Oscar buzz by wearing an Eritrean gown as a tribute to her late father, an Eritrean woman was suing members of the Saudi Arabian royal family for enslaving her at their home in Alexandria, Virginia. Slavery is part of the cultural DNA of Arabians. I shared a couple of books. Let me see. Total of Black Slave Trade in the Muslim World from Sahara, Red Sea, and Indian Ocean routes through the 19th century comes to an estimated 11.5 million, a figure not far short of the estimated almost 12 million to have been loaded on the ships during the 4th centuries of the Atlantic slave trade. That's an excerpt from a book Paul E. Lovejoy wrote called Transformation in Slavery. I thought that was an interesting title because I often talk about how the United States transformed from plantation slavery to prison slavery. All right. Another book, Raymond Mavi, estimated a total of 14 million black people were traded in Islam through the 20th century, including 300,000 for part of the 20th century. And it's a French title. The book is in France. I don't know, in French. I don't know if you could find an English copy, but I linked to that copy for those who do speak French. I went on to say, with this historical background of slavery in mind, just as in the United States, slavery still exists in both legal and illegal forms in Saudi Arabia and is part of the culture. Here are just a few news stories reporting complaints from members of various nations about the slavery and other abuses they face in Saudi Arabia. Thousands of Pakistanis are denied rights in Saudi Arabia, according to a report. It talks about slavery in that report. Indian woman tortured and enslaved in Saudi Arabia begs to be rescued in a viral video. Another woman from Punjab rescued from slavery in Saudi returns. Slaves on our streets. How an independent journalist witnessed an enslaved domestic workers dash for freedom. And in the last article I linked to, Rising in the Middle East, Forced Labor from Africa. Because as I mentioned, I noticed or I learned when I was in country back during the 90s that they pretty much import all their domestic labor. We used to see when we first got there, when we were driving in a convoy from the ports to one of our bases over there, we noticed all these luxury cars on the side of the road in the desert. And I'm like, what's up? They just, why are these cars out here? You know, there's nobody around. What are these cars doing out here? Couldn't find out later is these people so freaking lazy that they won't even change their own oil in their car. They'll just drive it till it stop running, leave it, and then go buy another one. Disgustingly wealthy people who are also lazy and don't want to do no kind of manual labor. So they import all their labor. So this is a very prevalent problem. And it's not much attention put on this. How often do they talk about this in the American news media? You know, how often are they leading with these type of stories about Saudi Arabia? Of course they're not. American news media, you might well say, is part of the American government. And if these stories is going to make the Saudis look bad and people questioning America's alliance with the House of Saud, you know, people might start asking questions. But I don't think so. I really don't think so. I mean, nobody practices slavery harder than the United States. And I'm talking about the legal slavery. Illegal, too, as we got millions of people on milk cartons that's missing that we don't know nothing about. What happened to them? So that's a story that caught my eye because it's just disgusting, man. It's disgusting. And I'm against slavery in all its forms. So, you know, I ain't never heard Hillary Clinton call people out. She was in India today. Bet she didn't talk about Indians being enslaved by those people who gave her all that jewelry. Next story. Let me move on before I run out of time. Now, I posted this story not only because it came across my feed. I actually came across it by accident. But because we got the
Davy D Hard Knock Radio hanging out with you this afternoon.
Give me just a moment. I'm sorry that video started up automatically. It is posted in blacktalkradionetwork.com. The title is Majority of Jews in Israel Practice Racism Against Africans Inside of Israel. So Minister Louis Farrakhan made a comment about Jews being in control of the FBI and the FBI, you know, practicing or their program called COINTELPRO, which resulted in assassinations of black leaders, infiltration of black groups, including the Nation of Islam. And so he was talking about that. And I'm like, wait a minute. What do they religious designation got to do with anything? Okay. Hoover, who created COINTELPRO, and it began going all the way back to Marcus Garvey, which included the first black FBI agent was hired specifically to infiltrate Marcus Garvey's organization. Okay. And so Hoover was no Jew. He wasn't a Jew. So, I mean, again, is it possible that some of them FBI agents were Jews? It's certainly possible. It's certainly possible. But this is where we get sidetracked. What do they religion got to do with it? And in inside the United States, I don't see a difference between, I don't know the difference between a Jew and a Christian white person, a white, because they're white. And they can function as white, and nobody would be any wiser unless we found out that they, for example, there was a lieutenant. I worked on the third shift. Well, we was working 12-hour shifts, but I worked on the night shift, so to speak, when I was in country in Saudi Arabia during the Gulf War. It was me, this black sergeant, and this white lieutenant. I didn't know the guy was Jewish until he told us that he was going on R&R for 3 days in observance of a Jewish holiday. As far as I was concerned, he was white, and he was white. You can be a Jew and be white. You can be a Jew and be black. Look at the Ethiopians in Israel. So I just can't buy into this confusion over religious labels. Now, what pissed me off was when these Republican Jews they mentioned in this story start calling on these black politicians who have either met with Farrakhan in the past or were part of some kind of larger event that Farrakhan was invited to and attended, and trying to tell them, like Keith Ellison, you know, you need to denounce Farrakhan and all this. And I'm like, hold up, wait a minute. They don't need to do no such thing. Now, they're saying they don't agree of singling out Jews as being solely responsible for COINTELPRO and attacking the black community. They've already said that. What more do they need to say? They shouldn't have to say anything calling on them to denounce Farrakhan. Farrakhan don't care if them people denounce him. What is that going to do? And so, why haven't you Jews that's calling on these black folks to denounce Farrakhan, why y'all ain't denouncing Netanyahu and his mistreatment of African refugees in Israel or the Ethiopian population that they cut in half with a eugenics program where they was either coercing them or without their knowledge giving them Depo-Vera shots, which cut their population in half in under 10 years, cut their birth rate in half and under, because Israel can't have all these black Jews. You know, we want to keep Israel white. You got black Jews in Israel right now protesting against the same police violence and brutality that black folks protest against here. Where are these Jews over here in the United States? These right-wing Jews, again, I don't throw people, I don't use labels to demonize a whole group of people as if they don't have individual opinions and stuff among themselves. Because I certainly don't agree with everything that some black people are into. But since you want to call on people to denounce people, where's your denouncement of Benjamin Netanyahu? In fact, you Jewish Republicans, where's your denouncement of Donald Trump? See, that works. That can work two ways here. We're going to be calling on people to denounce somebody, then who y'all denouncing? We don't have to denounce Farrakhan simply because we don't agree with something that he said. But before you call on somebody, you know, to denounce somebody else, you need to check your own community. So that's why I posted, they pissed me off, so that's why, and then this came across my news thread, so that's why I shared this little interview that David Sheen, who's been a guest on BTR News in years past, he's also been a guest on another radio program on the network called The Context of White Supremacy. And the way he described it to me when I did my interview with him, how Israel's society is, he said, picture the United States during segregation in the 1950s. If you want to know what Israel is like for black people, then picture the United States during the 1950s. So David Sheen is the one who was in this interview with David D, who it's about a 30-minute interview if you want to listen to the entire interview. It's a good listen. I listened to it in its entirety last night. But this is what I wrote. I said, 6 years ago, the Israel Democracy Institute Peace Index for May 2012 reported that 52% of Israeli Jews identified with an anti-African statement made by Imke Miri Regev. I don't know if I'm pronouncing her name correctly, but that was it. When she said that African migrants are a cancer in the body of the nation. And over a third of these Israeli Jews condone support violence against these Africans. See, I wrote that in 2013 on a wave of white supremacist anti-African support, the anti-immigrant MK Meretz Regev was elected to the Israeli Knesset and since 2015 has been promoted to be Minister of Culture and Sports of Israel. Israeli and Jewish journalist David Sheen discusses the racism that is rampant against Africans in Israel with David D. of Hard Knock Radio. So that's the interview. It is posted again in blacktalkradionetwork.com or on blacktalkradionetwork.com. So that's my message to you right-wing racist Jews. Many of you are white supremacists, just like the white supremacists who take issue with you, cause you a Jew. Hell, I've even read about Jews who have been members of white supremacist organizations here in the United States. So, you know, I don't agree with what Farrakhan said because it's historically incorrect and factually wrong. But at the same time, though, I'm not going to let these right-wing racist Jews be trying to put pressure on black people, trying to shame black people when, you know, they have this shameful behavior of supporting racism. Them damn selves. So that's that. Now, the last story, I'm going to just allow you to listen to it, but it's a very disgusting story. And again, this is points to the old saying that all skin folk ain't kin folk. All right. Just cause a person look like you, have the same nationality, speak the same language, don't mean they your friend. We got evil people of all different, from all different walks of life, who come in many shapes, who come in many skin colors, who practice different religions. All right. So skin folk just ain't kin folk. And you're aligning yourself with someone solely on the basis of skin color is naive. And it can get you killed. It can get you hurt. But this is just, oh man, this story right here really, really, really pissed me off. Especially with looking at these black children who are increasingly being kidnapped. Let me pull up the story and let you listen to it as we get ready to close out the broadcast. This needs to be addressed, and only Africans can address it because this is occurring in Africa. So I'm going to let you listen to this 2-minute report. Let me let you go ahead and listen to it. I actually wrote an article, but I'll let you listen to this report.
In Senegal, children's rights activists have held demonstrations in the capital, Dakar, over the rising number of child abductions and killings. The activists want authorities to act decisively to stop such crimes from taking place.
As Mariama Mane continues mourning the death of her daughter, memories of the girl's mother are still fresh.
My little girl had gone to the shop to buy milk and sweets. Her body was discovered in a plastic bag the following day. An autopsy report revealed that she had been raped before being strangled. It is worrying, since she was kidnapped at around 11 a.m.
Here is one of the many cases of child kidnappings and killings that have gripped Senegal. Activists, parents and other supporters have now taken to the streets in Dakar, calling on security organs to step in and end these criminal acts.
This is a movement founded by people who are outraged by the current situation. It was formed via social media networks when the authorities failed to take concrete action over the kidnappings. We created the group called Silence, They Kill Our Children on Facebook and Twitter. For 24 hours a week now, we worked on this project aimed at protecting our children.
Silence Similar demonstrations also happened in four other regions. A statement later issued by Senegal's Justice Ministry promised to take action against perpetrators, adding that several suspects are already in custody. Wazir Khamsin, CGTA.
All right, give me just a second. I'll adjust my audio settings. So when I came across this story, it just reminded me of actually something I said last week. Slavery is still occurring on the continent of Africa. All right. And you can take yourself over there, but you better know where you are and what's going on around you, and not think that everybody who look like you in Africa is your friend, or you might find yourself kidnapped and ending up in slavery. Who the hell do you think is selling all these Nigerian women to slavers in Libya, who are then in turn trafficked in Italy and other parts of Europe? It's other Nigerians. Who do you think is kidnapping all these children, selling them into slavery, or killing them in Senegal? And it's happening all over Senegal. Other Senegalese. Ain't no white people running up in Africa just kidnapping children off the street, just like it didn't happen in the centuries prior when it comes to slavery emanating from the continent of Africa. And I said, when y'all be telling that story like Europeans just ran up in Africa and just start loading people on the ships, you actually are portraying Africans as a bunch of weak people unable to defend their homeland. And it didn't go down like that. Africans sold other Africans to Europeans just like they sold them to Arabs. And it's going on today. Ain't nothing changed. Ain't nothing changed. This is why I say, if you're going to unite someone with a like mind. You believe in practicing justice, you can't unite with people who believe in practicing injustice. It won't work. It simply doesn't make sense. It's like oil and water. Won't mix. So my heart goes out to these parents over there in Senegal. I stand in solidarity with these activists who are angry with their government for doing nothing. For doing nothing. Basically, I saw another story about the sex tourism that's in Kenya. And these young girls, as young as 12, 13, 14 years old, selling themselves to white European tourists because they can get more money from those Europeans coming over there than what they can get from a Kenyan worker or what have you. And these young girls got pimps, being pimped by their fellow Kenyans. This is something that we don't like to talk about. And I don't understand why. You don't solve problems by not talking about them. We want to act like everybody else got dirty laundry, but we don't got dirty laundry. And everything's A-okay. And it's always someone from outside the community that's always hurting us. And we don't look at how we are hurting ourselves and turning on each other and doing harm to each other. Like Mr. Fuller said, your skin color don't mean a thing if you don't believe in not mistreating people. Your nationality means nothing if you don't believe in practicing justice. And practicing slavery is not justice. Very frustrating story. Very, very, very frustrating. Lots of problems that we got to solve worldwide. And it's going to take all hands on deck. Those of us who believe in practicing justice, because all of us don't. And that's just a simple fact of the matter. All right, I'm with 10 minutes over. Thank you for tuning in to Black Talk Radio News. And more importantly, thank you for your support of Black Talk Media Project and Black Talk Radio Network, one of the world's only independent digital radio, black digital radio and podcasting platforms, and it would not be here if not for your financial support. So I want to thank everyone for their support, and also reminding you that we will get those reports out tomorrow. Our stats in terms of our media operations for Black Talk Media Project and all of our partners who broadcast through the platform. With that said, recognize the fact that we live behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. The whole world is a battlefield. So you got to be on your P's and Q's. You got to be on high alert at all times. Very rarely can you let your guard down, because you'll find yourself a victim. So just be safe out there. But more importantly is be bold, be courageous, and join this abolitionist movement so that we can bring an end to slavery. With that said, peace and blessings to all.